So I'd like to begin this morning on a tangent, if I could. It's not what I want to talk about at all, but I was really moved as I was sitting in the first part of the service to think about Dr. King and to feel the connection, the sort of personal connection that I have with him through my teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh. Thich Nhat Hanh was a friend of Dr. King's, and Dr. King nominated Thich Nhat Hanh in 1966 for the Nobel Peace Prize. And I think these two men were friends because they both saw that the way forward is love. That there's, if without love, we're not going to solve these problems that we have in the world. And I felt that so strongly this morning during the sharing of joys and challenges. The way person after person talked about finding a way for us to solve this shutdown with a way that allows our president to save face. You know, I felt the love there, that there's a real wisdom here that's carried through from Dr. King and from my teacher and from, you know, the wisdom traditions, that love is the only way forward. I also think it's ironic that my teacher was a Vietnamese Zen monk, and he spent a lot of his time in the war in Vietnam working in villages, rebuilding villages that were bombed. And many of the people that he worked with, members of my order that this brown jacket represents, were killed during that process. And he had many run-ins where his life was threatened. And he lived. He's still alive, and he's 92 years old. And Dr. King, an African-American man in the United States, didn't live through the 60s, didn't live through the Vietnam War. So I'm really moved by that what we think of as the real fear of our life being at risk in Vietnam, maybe it was even more here. So thank you for allowing me that transgression. We are going to do something really different than we usually do. Oftentimes I come here and I talk about things that are a little bit abstract and maybe heady or in our heart, but not so much about how we engage with the world. And if I got anything from my tradition and my teacher, it's that this is an engaged activity. This is not just, we don't go to sit on a cushion in a monastery and never face the world again. That's not enough. Thich Nhat Hanh used to say that it's not enough to just look deeply. We have to take what we see and act in the world. Or else, what's the point of looking deeply? It's a kind of a self-centered activity, ultimately. So this is not a self-centered activity. Today, we're going to talk about how to act in the world on our insight. And it's going to be in something very specific, which is around the end of our lives. So what do I mean by this? Let me tell a little story. I have a really rich family, not monetarily, but rich in terms of different backgrounds. And I have two grandmothers that have taught me a lot. So I want to tell you stories about how the end of life went for my two grandmothers. So one of them, who I was very close to, big influence in my life, she told us over and over and over again what she valued in her life and what she didn't value and how she wanted the end of her life not to be about extending things on forever and ever. She knew that there was an end coming, and she was ready for it. And she created this consensus in the family. We knew what she wanted. So she was 96 and failing. She didn't want to be around anymore. And she got what we call in the medical community sometimes the old person's friend, which is pneumonia. And so we took her to the hospital, and the doctor that she knew well came to us and said, you know, she's dying of this. We could give her antibiotics, and we might be able to extend her life, but if it's not this, it's going to be something else right behind it. And the whole family was together, and we all said in unison, oh, she does not want antibiotics. She wants to go when it's her time. And it was a very easy experience for us in terms of being a family and participating. She really, really treated us with love. And we knew when her time came how to help her. And so afterwards, we've all had a very clear feeling about it. yes, this is exactly how it should have gone. This was her wishes, and we all felt very comfortable. My other grandmother, she was 102 years old and still strong and fighting. And she fell and broke her hip.
While skiing.
Really? My dad's 86 and he's still skiing, so yeah. And that's his mother. Right. She did not communicate what she wanted and what she didn't want. So when this happened, one of her daughters sort of made a unilateral decision that she would have an operation to pin this, and we didn't need to fix it that way. She could have been okay without it. And she died on the operating table as a result of that kind of a decision. It's not like one of these is right and one of these is wrong, but when in my second grandmother's case, none of us knew what she really wanted. We never had these conversations with her. So one person made a decision, doing the best she could, and a lot of us have since then said, I wish we hadn't. What if we had done something different? There's kind of a kind of recrimination. I've even felt a little bit of a thread of some of my family members looking at that person who made the decision and thinking, she did the wrong thing. You know, it kind of created this little bit of division in our family. So there are ways that we can plan for and look at the end of our own lives so that we make things good for ourselves and we make things good for those who love us. And that's what I want to help us do today, is to start to think clearly about your choices so that you can be authentic and truthful and people know what you want. So why would we do this? Why would we spend time actually looking at end-of-life choices? It's kind of a hard thing to do. No one really wants to do this. It can be painful. It is much more fun to go home and watch the football game, right? But there are reasons. And I want to lay out just some reasons for you so that this feels like it's important. It's important to me. Hopefully it's important to you. So the first one is about you. You can express your choices. If you don't express your choices, we have a medical system that will make choices for you. Our medical system is set up on the belief that everyone wants to live as long as possible, that is the primary value. And so as a medical system, we should make that happen for people. But when they do studies and actually talk to people, living longest is not the top of most people's priority list. The top of most people's priority lists are things like quality of life, as I define it, able to do the things I want to do, not to be a burden to others. And living a long time falls pretty low, but our system is biased for the idea that we should live as long as possible. And if that's what you want, the system's got you. We'll keep you alive as long as we possibly can. But if that's not what you want, you have to be very explicit about letting the system know what it is that you do want. And then oftentimes the system can carry it out. But short of your communication, you will be given the whole nine yards. You will be kept alive as long as possible, sometimes longer than possible. So that's one reason. The second reason was illustrated by my first grandmother, building consensus among those who love you. When there's consensus among your loved ones about what you want, these documents, these legal documents we're going to look at today, they don't come out. The only time I saw these come out in a hospital setting was when there was contention in the family. So by talking about this ahead of time, you build the consensus necessary for your death not to be a legal event so much as that it's a spiritual event. This is really important. Okay, and then finally, and this is sort of counterintuitive, but I'm going to make the case that we do this out of love. We do this out of love for the people who need to make these decisions in our stead. So this thing we're going to use today, this document, it's called the Five Wishes. And it is a way for us to communicate to people what we want. And the reason that we would want to do that is that it is an act of love. It can make your family's experience of your death very different. You know, imagine what it was like for my family with my grandmother, that even though she died and we were sad about it, she was a very important part of our family, but we knew it was the right thing. We all were in unison about it. It was an act of love that she gave us to have that. I've seen a number of families in my work in hospitals and cancer care and in hospice where when there's not this kind of clarity, there's family dissension. And seeds of suspicion are planted that can go for years and years and years and poison the family. So this act of love really helps us to extend, after we can no longer speak for ourselves, we can extend our loving action beyond our conscious action. We can extend our loving actions past our conscious actions. Okay, so that's my little bit of an introduction about why we would do this. So what I'd like us to do for the rest of our time, and I'm not sure how this fits in with the rest of the service, but what we'll do is we will take up this document, and I will give you some introductions. There's 5 different wishes that we can go through, and I can help you today in this room fill this out. So that's what we'll dive into at the appropriate time.